The problem in Kenya and East Africa is not the fact that there's no capital. I think the problem is that we don't have enough investable opportunities.
What secondary market opportunities do you see for someone, you know, still eyeing, still thinking, hey, I missed it out in the primary market, I was caught up in the noise, but maybe now I can still make a move. Is it overpriced? Is it underpriced?
So fortunately for investors, the price hasn't gone way high, right? We're looking at 9.10, 9.08. That's the price, I believe, today as we're having this interview.
Yeah.
So somebody thinking about coming into the market, it's not too late.
Maybe some will go as back and compare the retail participation in Kengen and in Safaricom.
Yeah.
What do you feel perhaps made it different here? Hi, welcome to another episode of Make Money the Podcast, the show where we not only tell you, but also show you what's happening to your money and what could happen. And of course, this is always guided by conversations with the experts of money right here. And before introducing my guest, obviously, we start with the topic. And Kenya Pipeline Company, our initial public offering, which closed in March, was the first ever IPO since 2014, so about slightly over a decade since the last one, and the first listing of a public of a state-owned entity since Safaricom in 2008. Now, what we saw from the results is that the offer was able to successfully hit 106.3 billion shillings, which was what they were looking for from the sale of 11.8 billion shares. But also what we did see are a lot of intrigues in terms of the participation, the skewed participation towards the institutional and regional investors vis-a-vis foreigners and retail investors. And, you know, a lot has happened ever since. The headlines have quieted down, which gives us a good opportunity here to make money, of course, to go back to that story and see what lessons we can pick from that. And if you follow the IPO closely and you're also a fan of Adele, you'd say it's water under the bridge. But we bring that water up here. And happy to introduce the guest for this week. She's the operations director at Faida Investment Bank, which was also the lead transaction advisor for this initial public offer. Ms. Rena Hicks, this is your second coming to the podcast.
To have you. Thank you so much, Kefa, for having me. It's a pleasure.
And I remember when we were planning for this conversation, you did mention that you've actually had a few meetings to try and get some of these lessons. So we hope you can share as much as we go through this conversation.
Okay.
And of course, we begin with meeting the target. Mm-hmm. 106.3 billion is no mean feat in this market. It's the biggest IPO by what it was able to raise. You beat what Safaricom did back in 2008. Yes, it's years gone past, but still an important a marker or important threshold to cross. We saw the demand even outside. You know, it was an oversubscription at around 105.7%. There were bids for 12.4 billion shares when only 11.8 billion shares were available. Taking that performance before we move into other intrigues, what does that indicate in terms of the potential for this market for issuers?
I think that that oversubscription and given the timeline we had and the timing of the IPO being, you know, January of the year, sort of just shows the problem in Kenya and East Africa is not the fact that there's no capital. I think the problem is that we don't have enough investable opportunities. I think that's the message that we get. And I think with sufficient investable opportunities, there's capital. And so the message we want to send out to any company, any organization or institution that is looking to grow using the capital markets, there's opportunities for generating capital through the capital markets. I think that's the message that we have been sent. And also the fact that the market has really, really grown. Yeah.
So let's move to the performance. And I spoke about this skewed concentration of the participants towards institutional investors, more so local institutions and also the regional institutions, and most of the case of Uganda. And if anyone has followed the headlines, you might have seen how that went about. Let's focus on retail. And, you know, here at Make Money, we mostly focus on the person making the investment and not so much, you know, the macros or the big institutions. We try to make it very personal. Okay. So 73,000 retail investors came into market, and I know still sizable numbers when we, you know, we don't talk of too many retail investors around. But of course, and we know now this was the first also EIPO, so the first fully paperless IPO to come through. We had also ZD launching around the same time, which is, you know, has enabled investors to just purchase shares and participate also in the IPO through the mobile money platform. I don't want to suggest 73,000 is a little or more. I'll just say it's a modest number.
Yeah.
But looking at the participation and why more so retail, perhaps, what are the reasons you're finding out that perhaps we didn't have as many retail, as many individual investors buy into this initial public offer as maybe someone might have thought? Maybe you cross 100,000, you reach 200,000. Maybe some will go as back and compare the retail participation in Kengen and in Safaricom.
Yeah.
What do you feel perhaps made it different here?
So, you know, to be honest, 73,000 is not a small number, as you've said. Nevertheless, yes, our expectation initially was we would have a lot more retail participation, but we faced quite a number of headwinds, and I'll share what those were. One of the things that was quite a challenge was the fact that we haven't had a massive IPO in 10, in fact, not even 10 years, 17 years. So the result of that is that people actually were not aware what a CDS account is. What is a CDS account? Safaricom had 800,000 retail participants, and a lot of those, of course, have CDS accounts, but they don't know their number. Now, the EIPO process required one to go on a platform, the EIPO platform, to apply for their shares, and you needed to have your CDS account number. And a lot of people didn't even know, where do I go to get my CDS account number? I remember during some retail roadshows, some of the questions that people asked is, why do you need my PIN? Kwani mnatafuta nini? You know, you want to report me to KRA and things like that. So a lot of suspicion around why some of the requirements are needed. And so we began to realize that a fully electronic, seamless, frictionless process is what would help to bring retail back. Because we also realized that the demographic of retail has also shifted and changed over time. We have a huge number of young people who would love to participate, but they don't want to go through a process of opening an account first and then go ahead and apply for the IPO. So that's one. I think that was something that we realized. And by the way, when Ziidi came, which was the last week before we closed this IPO, there were 36,000 accounts that applied through Ziidi. So you see, if it had been begun a lot earlier, we would have seen a lot more retail participation. I think the other thing around the challenge with retail participation, in my personal view, is the noise around the IPO. There was a lot of political noise around it. And we would have preferred for it to be issue-based, to be honest. Does Kenya Pipeline have accounts? You know, are their accounts healthy? How are they in terms of cash flows? Do they have any debt? Where are they investing? Where is growth going to come from? What is their strategy? That is the conversation we should have had, as opposed to a lot of political noise around the situation that, around the IPO, which I felt had an impact on retail participation. Because already the stock market has not been one that people are aware of, which goes to my third point. One of the reasons that I feel we didn't have enough participation is because literacy and awareness around investor education, around the capital markets, is something that has been lacking. And it became very clear to me during this IPO. And so this is something that I keep insisting and saying, it's something we must keep doing. Not an event, when there's an event like a rights issue or an event like an IPO, it needs to be a continuous process and it needs to be done by all people within this ecosystem, whether it is the CMA, the market players and participants such as us, FIDA Investment Bank, and our other colleagues in the industry, the CDSC, NSC, it needs to be a combined effort. So with those three things, I think that's why we saw a bit of a challenge with the application. Well, not so much a challenge, but not what we expected. In fact, the allocation was only 2.5%, and yet, you know, we could have seen a lot more applications come through for retail.
So a follow-up here. It's been 17 years since the last big IPO, which is Safaricom, right? 2008, and I can only let you guess where I was in 2008. It's quite a long time ago. Somehow almost like people have forgotten how IPOs were like. And it reminds me of something, you know, just out of my mind that I was watching the other day, that human or manned missions to the moon are returning, but they are trying to remind themselves how they used to go to the moon, because we haven't had people go to the moon since the 70s.
And you can imagine.
Is it the same case here?
You know, if I use that analogy and we say that they used to go to the moon successfully, and then there was a trip to the moon and somebody fell off the moon, right? Would anybody be interested in going to the moon?
Not at all.
Just to sort of explain, like during that season, from the last IPO that was big, so let's talk about Safaricom 2008, 2015, 2016, we had a few issues in the capital markets, like the bond issues that went under, so banks that went under. That season actually caused a lot of people to be jaded with regard to capital markets, and that has had an impact on the interest in capital markets as a whole. And so that also has impacted how people position themselves where investing is concerned in capital markets.
The other intrigue for me, and this was also widely covered, is around pricing.
Okay.
You know, the 9 shillings per share. There was a lot, there was quite the debate there, and I know there were quite a lot of analyst reports, of course, trying to determine, is 9 shillings the intrinsic value? Is it a good value when you're looking at a short-term perspective, long-term perspective? Viewers of this podcast, we remember we had a whole conversation on whether KPC is a compelling offer.
Yeah.
Now we come back, we are removed from that process. That has closed. We've seen the price, of course, it opened around 9 shillings 30 cents. And it's relatively held up around the offer price. And for you, is this vindication? I know you got a lot of, a lot of it is, part of it was political, and I don't want to delve into that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you got to have a view of, you know, the debate and the contentious issues around, is it overpriced, is it underpriced? Will you even get takers at that price? Might you not just maybe have it and maybe get full subscription from it, from that sense of making it cheap at the marketplace? Is there a vindication from where you sit in seeing that price hold, the offer price hold in the secondary market?
Thank you for that question. I think that people need to appreciate something. When you're doing an IPO, you have to create a balance. And the balance is between the issuer and getting the true value of this company, the true intrinsic value and maximum value you can out of selling your business. And then there's a balance between that and the investors, and giving the investors a price that post-IPO is sustainable, and one where they will not see a situation where the value of their investment comes down. So, I mean, the stock market goes up and it comes down, but initially you want to make sure that you put it at a price that gives the issuer a good price and at the same time gives investors an opportunity to actually invest in something that will increase in value. Now, we also have to remember this is a public asset, and we as Kenyans own Kenya Pipeline. And so one of the things and the reactions from the pricing from the stakeholders that are important around KPC itself and the government as a whole was, we cannot have a situation where we underprice this IPO, because it means if we sold it and the price went up double after the issue opens in the secondary market, then it means we left money on the table. So you don't want to ever leave money on the table as an issuer. You want to get the most that you can, but also give an opportunity for investors to get money. So the fact the price has remained where it is, I suppose, is vindication. Now, does it mean it will always be there? Not necessarily. It will go up. It may come down. Will it go below? I don't think so, but it may. But I don't think so. I think right now we're in a very tricky situation as a country, but globally, with so many things going on, with a war in the Middle East, and also still in Russia and Ukraine. And so those things can affect the performance of companies that are listed on the exchange. I mean, you saw, for example, Equity Bank announce fantastic results, and the price, we expected to go to certain levels, but it hasn't. It has actually come down. You know, KCB as well, you've seen Safaricom also. So I guess my point is prices go up and down, but yes, the price we did offer was a good price for the government, and a good price for Kenyans as well, for long-term investors, yes.
So, Rina, before closing it up, there's somebody who will be watching this back and wonder, I was not among the 73,000 retail investors. Mm-hmm. I was caught up in the noise, didn't participate. But there's a secondary market which also presents opportunity to either come in or get out. For someone sitting out there and they're like, wait, I wasn't sure whether this is a good asset. I wasn't sure whether the initial offer price will hold in the secondary trading. Mm-hmm. That has held well in the opening month of trading.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question here is directed to ask is, what secondary market opportunities do you see for someone, you know, still I'm still thinking, hey, I missed it out in the primary market, I was caught up in the noise, but maybe now I can still make a move. What move can you make in the secondary market?
Yeah. So fortunately for investors, the price hasn't gone way high, right? We're looking at 9, 9.10, 9.08. That's the price, I believe, today as we're having this interview.
Yeah.
So somebody thinking about coming into the market, it's not too late. You can always come in. Of course, now it's a little bit more expensive. And of course, there's the cost of being able to buy, which is the commissions and fees, brokerage fees that you pay. But it's not too high in terms of the price. So for somebody who did not participate in the primary market, the secondary market offers another opportunity. So there's, you know, if you do want to participate in this company and hold it long term, I think it is it's okay to consider buying the shares even now. Yeah.
So to wrap it up, I'll come back to the analogy we shared of putting man back on the moon. And what we are seeing is, you know, you've forgotten about how you ever put man on the moon. So you have to arrange missions in a way to guide that process so that it becomes easier again, as we saw in the 60s and the 70s. Mm. So for a company out there that also wants to have their man on the moon or their initial public offerings, what overall have you learned from this IPO process? And what does it tell or what does it inform a future issuer in regards to how they come to market and how also they market across all the categories of investors, be it institutional, foreign investor, or even local individuals like myself and yourself?
Yeah. Wow. I think the first thing I'd tell issuers, potential issuers, is that the market has capital. I was looking at some statistics and I'm like, you know, we have 2 trillion shillings in the pension industry with seeking opportunity to invest in. We have seen the CIS industry grow so much in the last decade. In fact, in the last 5 years, we've seen AUMs, or asset under management, grow from about 127 billion all the way to over 680 billion shillings in just 5 years. And so that just tells you there's growth in the market, there's growth in terms of capital that people want to invest in. Even just look at the bond market and the treasury bill market specifically. We are seeing consistent oversubscription. Some weeks, the government wants to issue 50 billion shillings, they collect 150 B. And they have these weekly bonds monthly, and there's capital consistently being deployed to these different opportunities. So the first message is, this region, particularly Kenya, has capital. Uganda has capital. Tanzania, Rwanda, these guys participated in this IPO. And so it is possible for you to raise capital. I think the second thing and the second learning that would be beneficial for potential issuers is, if you are issuing any IPO, whether it is a bond issue that you're doing or an IPO through selling shares, is, if you want to involve retail, because this was a big lesson for us, begin a pre-IPO phase of educating the market fairly early. Spend time allowing people to understand your business, what you do, how you make money, what your business model is, what the opportunities are for them, so that then they begin to understand. And you then don't have to go through a very rigorous process of marketing during the IPO period when your offer period is very limited because of the statutory requirements. But I would say that what makes a capital market thrive and vibrant is issuers. So come to the market to look for money, because there is money available. I was looking at India statistics, KEFA, and I'm like, my goodness, we're talking about one IPO in 10 years. It's an embarrassing thing to even say as a Kenyan. India, last year, 103. You know, the year before, 91 or 97 IPOs. Already, we're only at the end of the first quarter of 2026. India has already had 18 IPOs, you see? So if we can make it a habit, as people in the business field and in private sector, to look at the capital markets as a potential place to raise capital, we will only make it more vibrant for each other, because capital should flow to the most efficient and effective parts of the economy. And that's why the capital markets exists, just for that. So, yeah, I think in summary, that's what I would say.
So, Ms. Rina, thank you for being on the podcast. And I know, you know, you've shared some of the lessons from that KPC listing. And I know the postmortem is not the right the best word to go for, but it's a good dissection of the issues you faced and how you perhaps overcame them and how in future that can, you know, set us better in future IPOs.
Yeah.
So Rina Hicks is the operations director at FIDA Investment Bank and a guest and a friend of the podcast. So we hope to have you here many more times, not just the two that you have been here.
Thank you, Kefa.
And that has been another episode of Make Money, the podcast by The Business Daily. My name is Kefa Muirore, and until I catch you on the next episode here, remember to make your money work for you. Goodbye.